And now a very curious gentleman. Someone you no doubt have run into again and again. Here is Edgar Allan Poe's account of The Man in the Crowd, performed for you by Bernard Mays.
There are some secrets which do not permit themselves to be told. Men die nightly in their beds, wringing the hands of ghostly confessors and looking them piteously in the eyes. Die of despair of heart and convulsion of throat on account of the hideousness of mysteries which will not suffer themselves to be revealed. Now and then, alas, the conscience of man takes up a burden so heavy in horror that it can be thrown down only into the grave. And thus, the essence of all crime is undivulged. Not long ago, about the closing in of an evening in autumn, I sat at the large bay window of a coffee house in London, peering through the smoky panes the street, one of the principal thoroughfares of the city. As the darkness came on, the throng momentarily increased. Two dense and continuous tides of population were rushing past the door. At first, I looked at the passengers in masses. Soon, however, I descended to details and regarded with minute interest the innumerable variety. The greater number had a satisfied, business-like demeanor, others restless, talking to themselves. The tribe of clerks, one breed wearing the cast-off graces of the gentry, another the affectation of respectability. Descending the scale of what is termed gentility, darker and deeper themes, beggars, ghastly and feeble invalids, drunkards. As the night deepened, the late hour brought forth every species of infamy from its den, and deepened in me also the interest of the scene. With my brow to the glass, I was thus occupied in scrutinizing the mob, when suddenly there came into view a countenance, that of a decrepit old man, some 65 or 70 years of age, a countenance which at once arrested and absorbed my whole attention. There arose within my mind the ideas of vast mental power, of caution, of penuriousness, of avarice, coolness, malice, of bloodthirstiness, of triumph, of merriment, of excess terror, of intense, of extreme despair. I felt singularly aroused and fascinated. Then came a craving desire to keep the man in view, to know more of him. I made my way into the street and pushed through the crowd in the direction which I had seen him take. I at length came up within sight of him, approached and followed him closely, yet cautiously, so as not to attract his attention. He was short in stature, very thin, and apparently very feeble. His clothes generally were filthy and ragged. It was now fully nightfall, and the humid fog had ended in a settled, heavy rain. For half an hour, the old man held his way with difficulty along the great thoroughfare, and I walked close at his elbow through fear of losing sight of him. Never once turning his head to look back, he didn't observe me. By and by, he passed into a cross street, not quite so much thronged as the one he quitted. He walked more slowly, more hesitatingly. He crossed and recrossed the way repeatedly without apparent aim. The street was a narrow and long one, and his course lay within it for nearly an hour, during which the passengers had gradually diminished. A turn brought us into a square, brilliantly lighted and overflowing with life. He urged his way steadily and perseveringly. I was surprised, however, to find, upon his having made the circuit of the square, that he turned and retraced his steps, repeating the same walk several times, once nearly detecting me as he came round with a sudden movement. In this exercise, he spent another hour. The rain fell fast, the air grew cool, and the people were retiring to their homes. With a gesture of impatience, the wanderer passed into a by-street comparatively deserted. And down this, some quarter of a mile long, he rushed with an activity I couldn't have dreamed of seeing in one so aged. A few moments later brought us into a large and busy bazaar, and he forced his way to and fro without aim among the host of buyers and sellers. At no moment did he see me that I watched him. He entered shop after shop, priced nothing, spoke no word, looked at all objects with a wild and vacant stare. I was now utterly amazed at his behaviour. Excuse me. I was resolved to follow him wherever he went, and that we should not part until I had satisfied myself in some measure respecting him. By 11 o'clock, the company were fast deserting the bazaar. A shopkeeper, in putting up a shutter, jostled the old man. He shuddered and hurried into the street, looked anxiously around him for an instant, and then ran with incredible swiftness through many crooked and peopled lanes, until we emerged once more upon the great thoroughfare whence we had started. It was still brilliant with gas, but the rain fell fiercely, and there were few persons to be seen. The stranger grew pale. He walked moodily, then with a heavy sigh, turned in the direction of the river, and plunging through a great variety of devious ways, came out at length in view of one of the principal theatres. The audience were thronging from the doors. The old man gasped as if for breath and threw himself into the crowd. Eventually the company grew more scattered, and his old uneasiness and vacillation were resumed. For some time, he followed closely a party of some 10 or 12 roisterers. But one by one, they dropped off. In a narrow and gloomy lane, the stranger paused, and for a moment seemed lost in thought. And then, with every mark of agitation, pursued rapidly a route which brought us to the most noisome quarter of London. Everything wore the worst impress of the most deplorable poverty and crime. Tall, antique, worm-eaten, wooden tenements, horrible, filthy, festered in the dammed-up gutters. The whole atmosphere teemed with desolation. Yet as we proceeded, the sounds of human life revived. Large bands of the most abandoned London populace were seen reeling to and fro. The spirits of the old man again flickered up, as a lamp which is near its death's hour. Once more he strode onward. Suddenly a corner was turned. A blaze of light burst upon our sight, and we stood before one of the huge suburban temples of intemperance. It was now nearly daybreak, and a number of wretched inebriates were still pressing in and out. With half a shriek of joy, the old man forced a passage within. He stalked backward and forward, without apparent object, among the throng. When finally they were gone, it was something even more intense than despair that I then observed. Yet he didn't hesitate, but with a mad energy, he retraced his steps at once to the heart of the mighty London. Long and swiftly he fled, while I followed him in the wildest amazement, resolute not to abandon a scrutiny in which I now felt an interest all-absorbing. The sun arose while we proceeded, and when we had reached the most thronged part of the populous town, it presented an appearance of human bustle and activity scarcely inferior to what I had seen on the evening before. And here, long among the increasing confusion, did I persist in my pursuit of the stranger. But, as usual, he walked to and fro, and during the day didn't pass out from the turmoil of the street. As the shades of the second evening passed on, I grew wearied unto death, and stopping full in front of the wanderer, gazed at him steadfastly in the face. He noticed me not, but resumed his solemn walk. This old man is the type and genius of deep crime. He refuses to be alone. He's the man of the crowd. It will be in vain to follow. I shall learn no more of him nor of his deeds, for he doesn't permit himself to be read.
That was Bernard Mays in Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Man in the Crowd.